Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we have a full show today, including a review of the news of the week, terrific interview with one of our favorites, Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany, full slate of game previews, and our Give and Go segment. Dixie, let's get it. What's going on, Dix? How's your week?
Good. It's been good. Weather's been nice after that series of snow flurries and whatever we had last week. That hung around for a few days. The ice, the sleet, then the snow or whatever it was. So weather's been good this week.
Yeah, it was 60 degrees. All the ice finally melted, and it feels starting to feel like spring.
Yeah, I can see my lawn again. You see how brown it is.
I was just thinking, we really must sound like old dudes because we start just every podcast. Every time we say hello to each other, we talk about the weather. I think it's really funny.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to start it on a different note then. So whenever you say news of the week, I always think of, and I think he calls himself Running on Empty. Have you ever seen the food review guy on YouTube?
No, I haven't.
He does all fast food. And whenever he wears a suit and a tie and he has real slick hair, he's a funny guy. He can't be any more than 20 years old, but he's been doing these food reviews for like 6 or 7 years. When you go back to when he was, you know, what I think is 13 or 14 years old, he's so funny though. He's like, I think it's called News of the Week, but basically he's like, welcome to Running on Empty Food Review. And he reviews all fast food. So I've watched him a little bit during the pandemic. He did, what did he do? He did the Popeye's chicken sandwich, the
delicious,
the Papadilla. He did that. I saw that one. The Papadilla is basically like a folded over pizza. That's all. Okay. And it's, I think Papa John's has.
That sounds,
you ever seen the commercials?
I haven't, but it makes me think of like a Papa John's product, probably.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he does everything under the sun, and I love him. Like, he's the kind of guy, and he always has a big glass of water in like a light blue chalice. And what he does is he does. So let's say the whole review is like 15 minutes long. We do like a 5 or 7 minute intro. Then he starts eating the food. While he's eating the food, he doesn't say a word. He doesn't say anything. And then he takes, like, if it's a burger, he eats like half the burger. If it's a pizza, he eats two, you know, like a slice or two. And then he, you know, wipes his mouth off the whole time he's taking drinks of water. And then he, like, lets it settle for a little bit. And then he gives his review. It's really funny.
What's his name?
I like that guy.
What's his name?
I don't know what the guy's name is. I think he calls it Running on Empty. But it's like, I think under YouTube, it's News of the Week. But just Google in like food review guy, fast food review guy on and he'll pop up on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
By the way, I'm an excellent Google search person.
So am I.
It should be a full-time job. I'm very good at it. And I'm very proud of my skills. Yeah, I'm seeing the guy now. I'll have to watch some of these. I'll put it in like our show notes. So
you looked him up and you found him pretty quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty slick dude.
I see it now. All right, like I said, Dix, there's a full lot to talk about today. So let's begin with your thoughts on what you saw last week in some of the games. There was a lot of first time out for many teams. The Big Ten got underway, was big news. Army blasted Syracuse and Georgetown smoked Villanova. What were some of your thoughts from the weekend?
I think the biggest takeaway and a lot of people's takeaway was Syracuse. getting housed in the dome, up 6-1, and then they just got run out of the building.
17-5 run by Army?
Yeah, 17-11 was the final, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen – I probably have. Like, whenever something like this happens, you're like, well, I've never seen – we probably have seen, you know, something of this ilk with Syracuse over the years. But to see that take place and just how disorganized their interior defense seemed to be was crazy. You got to give a lot of credit to Army. We knew they were a good team after playing Virginia really tough in their opening game of the season. But to go into the – and it's been well documented. Army is not afraid of the Carrier Dome. They've had success in there, including in the NCAA tournament. But to watch them just really work the Orange, that to me was a revelation. Of course, now it's coming out that – well, look, Syracuse was great last year, but they didn't really play anybody. Forget it. Forget that. On paper, this team is very good, is very talented. That first midfield was dynamic in the first quarter. Then they seemed to disappear. They got nothing out of their attack. The attack looked a little bit better last year. The defense lost Nick Mellon, so that's a huge hole to fill. But anyway, that was my biggest takeaway from the weekend. Then you mentioned the Big Ten, Maryland, you know, the swagger with which they played, the confidence with which Maryland played. And what I saw from Maryland that was a little different from in years past was the offensive pressure that they put on Michigan, meaning they were looking for offense right when they crossed the midfield, which isn't out of the ordinary for most teams, Maryland included. But they were quick to attack even in the shot clock. They were like full court offense, you know? So I thought that was really impressive. Rutgers, how about the win over Penn State? We talked about it. They didn't really have great goaltending last year after Max Edelman graduated. They get in, and I'm going to mix this up until I have a Rutgers game. You got Colin Kirst, you have Connor Kirst, and you have CJ Kirst all on the same roster. So it's Colin was the goalie. He was terrific in that game. Connor, the midfielder, 7 points. I think that's a piece Rutgers has been missing. They've had that explosive attack, but they haven't had that go-to marquee middie that could really, really pull them through. So the Rutgers performance, I thought, was really impressive. And then you hit on it, Georgetown over Villanova, 16-1. Wow. Yeah, that's
Villanova was a top 20 team. I don't ever remember seeing a beating like that.
No, anytime you can hold a college lacrosse team, let alone a Division I college lacrosse team, then a top 20 Division I lacrosse team to one goal and a conference opponent at that, that's incredibly impressive. And the fun fact, if anybody doesn't know, is Villanova went up at that game 1-0. And then they were outscored 16-0 down the stretch. So super impressive. Yeah, I can't believe, you know, when I listened back to the podcast last week, I can't believe the opportunity we missed to make, you know, Ed Pinckney and Patrick Ewing references when we talked Georgetown Villanova and, you know, the basketball rivalry that was or still is, I should say. But wow. And how about Gibson Smith, man? I said it on the show last week, you know, that is he is a Schmeisser Award candidate big time for the best defenseman in Division I college lacrosse. And he certainly looked like it along with the rest of his back line last week in Philadelphia.
Since those games took place, Dix, we've had a fairly light week of news. ESPNU released a TV schedule, includes 120 games across the ESPN networks. 15 will be on ESPNU, 20 on the ACC network. At this point, most people can watch most of those games, if not all of them, through some type of app. And that's exciting for lacrosse fans.
No doubt. The access to live lacrosse content has never been greater than at this point in time. I'm super excited. I've got my first game tonight, Penn State, Maryland, live in State College. Can't wait for that. Joe Beninati and I will be on at 5:30. And then you have Hopkins, Michigan, and then Rutgers, Ohio State. I believe all those games will be on BTN Plus. You know, and then the ACC Network has been fantastic with their content. Really, their menu of games, and that's no different this weekend. I think they have two games highlighted by the Syracuse Virginia game, 6 o'clock on ACC Network. But then all the, you know, look, hat, tip of the cap. You know, Lars Tiffany will touch on it later. The live streams provided by the schools that ESPN Plus picks up, that BTN Plus picks up. You know, there's a lot of effort that goes into those happenings. So really, you know, tip of the cap to all those folks involved in that kind of thing, to give lacrosse fans, especially in a time where most places are not allowing fans outside of immediate family. It's really good to be able to have access to that content.
Another news item that popped up on Thursday, Caton Johnson, goalie at North Carolina, put his name in the transfer portal. Johnson was a 2019 ACC Rookie of the Year. Even this year, he was a preseason All-America selection. I think he made third team or honorable mention, USILA. And I think we might see some more of that as the season goes on. I mean, we always do. That's a huge understatement. But a top player of his caliber who just, you know, got beat out. Will he be able to play? Can he play right away? For instance,
meaning if he transferred right here and now, could he suit up in 2021 for a team?
Yeah. We're talking about TD Erland doing something similar to that, possibly.
Right, right. That I don't know. I'm not a compliance person. I'm not an internal person. Lacrosse has typically been friendly for transfers. In other words, a coach has to sign a release for a player to be eligible right away. We see a lot of times in football and basketball on the collegiate level, those kids, when they transfer, they have to sit out a year because a coach will not sign a release. Whereas lacrosse is the converse to that. Typically a release is signed, but I do not know if he could, you know, like, in other words, he went to the portal on Thursday morning, let's say Boston University. Let's do a reverse Chris Gray, right? Caton Johnson from Carolina wants to go to Boston University. Could he suit up for BU in the coming weeks? That I don't know.
In NCAA basketball, I know that they allowed student athletes who had planned to sit out this entire school year as normal in a Division I to Division I transfer in men's basketball. They are allowed to play. So guys didn't have to sit out their year. So I don't know if they'll let that happen immediately in men's lacrosse. It'll be interesting to follow. So let's get to the games of the week. They're a little top heavy this week. Not a lot of great games, but
games top heavy of the week.
There's a few marquee games at the top of the list that are just outstanding. We'll start with the game that you're doing tonight with Joe B. Number 4, Maryland, travel to State College to take on number 13, Penn State, at 5:30 on BTN.
Yeah, you got it. Maryland, like I mentioned, playing with a ton of confidence. I like their defense last week too. Nick Grill and Brett Makar. You know, Makar is the guy. Maryland always seems to have that defenseman that from his freshman to his sophomore year just makes that jump and then becomes the next Smizer candidate, first-team All-American, first-team All-Conference. I think Makar fits that role, even though, you know, he's technically a junior. You know, the 2020 season, sort of a mulligan. And then, you know, Penn State licking their wounds after that loss to Rutgers. You know, there was a sequence in that game that I really thought it propelled Rutgers to that win. Penn State came down on a break, end of the third quarter, got a decent shot. Colin Kearse makes the save, is able to get it out quickly. Ball goes up to Connor Kearse, and he pulls up a la Steph Curry and just hit like a 15-yard high bouncer against Colby Kinese. He fooled Kinese. Kinese went to his butt, and Kearse roofed it. So that's a 2-goal turnaround. You know, instead of it being, I think it would have been a 1-goal deficit, now it's a 3-goal deficit for – and I could have that wrong. I can't remember the exact score at the time, but it was a 2-goal swing. Instead of Penn State getting a goal, they gave up a goal. And that momentum really carried into the fourth quarter. And I thought that Rutgers did a better job of managing their emotions and executing and that kind of thing. But that with that being said, Penn State and Maryland, both, neither one of them faced off well last week. You know, one was a big winner. The other one was a two-goal loser. But neither one of them faced off well. And for Penn State, Gerard Arcieri actually gave way to Jake Glatz. Arcieri didn't take as many face-offs as Jake Glatz did. So is that an effect of the new rules? You know, but, you know, expect the unexpected in COVID, I think, is the term. And but either way, this will be a terrific game on BTN tonight. These are the two, they have been the two marquee teams in the Big Ten over the last couple of years in terms of NCAA tournament, you know, progression, placement, advancement, all that other kind of thing. And it'll be really fun to watch them play.
Yeah, I can't wait. I look forward to hearing you and Joe B on the call. Dix, generally, we only preview top 20 matchups here in this space, and there are three on Saturday. But first, I want to get your thoughts on what you saw out of the Blue Jays last week as the Peter Milliman era gets underway at Homewood as it relates to Johns Hopkins traveling to Michigan. 1 o'clock game, as you said, that'll be on BTN Plus.
Well, I think when, you know, when you talk about Hopkins in that game, I don't, you can't not mention Ohio State, just how revved up they were for that game, how much energy they brought to that contest. And I'm super excited to watch Ohio State play Rutgers this weekend. I think that's going to be a terrific, terrific lacrosse game between two teams that are really, you know, Ohio State national finalists in 2017, haven't been back to the NCAA tournament since, and Rutgers is chasing that elusive NCAA tournament berth. I think that's going to be a great game. But with that being said, you knew it was going to be sloppy. You knew it was going to be tough early going for Johns Hopkins when you consider no fall whatsoever. And then they got back to work, 10-day pause, back to work, brand new coaching staff top to bottom, new schemes offensively, new things defensively. I think the first half was incredibly disappointing for Blue Jay fans because it just looked like they couldn't compete. And at times it looked like they weren't playing hard. And I don't know if that's fair or unfair. The thing that frustrated me watching that game is it just seemed like guys couldn't even keep their feet. You know, guys were falling all over the place. They were dropping balls, missing passes. I mean, that kind of thing's going to happen, but, you know, it was still frustrating. But I think you have to feel good about the second half. You know, the Blue Jays clawed their way back, got to within four goals a couple of times, just couldn't get any closer. So, you know, Connor DeSimone moving to attack, that looks like a great move for him. And I think that's going to bode well moving forward. But look, it's no surprise that Hopkins is in a rebuilding mode right now, as much as Hopkins can be in rebuilding. And it's going to be a work in progress. And I think Blue Jay fans are looking forward to the week-to-week progression, development of this team.
So the Blue Jays will take on Michigan. Michigan coming off a 20-9 loss to Maryland, as you mentioned. What did you see out of Michigan, and how do they match up with the Blue Jays this week?
Josh Shawada is what I saw from Michigan. I think he had four or five goals. He had a sensational 2020, the limited sample that we got to see of him as a freshman. And he just continues to play really, really well. And much like Hopkins, they struggled mightily against Maryland in the first half, but came back in the second half and fought and gained a little bit of ground. It didn't show any quit. So, you know, if you're Kevin Connery, just like Peter Milliman, you're taking away and saying, okay, first 30 minutes were really shaky. The next 30 minutes were much better. And we've got something to build on. So, you know, I think if you're a Johns Hopkins fan, and I think if you're a Michigan fan, you're looking at each of these teams saying, this is perfect. These are the teams we want to be playing. Okay. So Hopkins is playing a Michigan team that was handled by Maryland. Michigan playing a Hopkins team that was throttled by Ohio State. Okay, let's get together and play these, you know, play each other and see what happens. So I think it should be a really good game in Ann Arbor, that game on BTN Plus.
I was encouraged by what I saw in the second half, the Blue Jays game against Ohio State, and I look forward to seeing them continue to improve throughout the season. All right, Dix, the next game, and this is not a misprint. I had to double check this on each of the school's websites because everyone knows that they just played and they were also supposed to have a scrimmage earlier this year. But number 15 High Point, 1-1, will go back to Chapel Hill to play the number 3 Tar Heels, who are 4-0 now, on Saturday afternoon in another top 20 matchups.
You didn't know this is a best of five series between High Point and North Carolina. That's what this is, right?
Yeah.
Carolina has a 2-0 lead because I think they won the scrimmage that they played, and then they won a couple weeks ago in a terrific game, 17-15. Now, look, in all seriousness, the North Carolina High Point game came about because of Bellarmine. Had to bail out because of COVID issues. They were supposed to play North Carolina. High Point stepped in, and they had a wonderful game. That was a really entertaining. That was a game that Carolina was firmly in control of, and the Panthers stormed back to make it competitive. So round three in this one, and Asher Nolting was sublime. Carolina for High Point, I should say, in that Carolina game, they also showed they have a lot of other weapons. Their goalie, the lefty, but he was terrific against North Carolina. He ended up with 17, 18 saves, something along those lines. But North Carolina, man, those guys are good. You know, that is a deep and talented team. They were able to take care of a really pesky, feisty Richmond team last weekend. That ultimately proved to be a really, really good game. Chris Gray continues to impress. I mean, they've got four or five attackmen that can make plays. They've got six or seven middies that can make plays. So this should be entertaining. And I guess if Carolina wins, they win the series. If High Point pulls this off, they may have to go to a game four to extend that best of five series.
Yeah, that game four is TBD if necessary. In a top 10 matchup in the Big Ten, number 10 Rutgers go out to Columbus to play number 6 Ohio State. Big game for both teams.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. And we mentioned the Curse brothers. They were both great. You know, Kieran Mullins, Adam Charlambides. But you have to be encouraged by Rutgers' faceoff work against Penn State. That's an area that has typically been an Achilles heel for the Scarlet Knights. And they were able to win, around 55-60% against Penn State. And it'll be interesting to see if Justin Anasio returns this week for the Buckeyes. Ryan Tarenfenko took most of their faceoffs last week because Anasio was not available. And how about Ryan Tarenfenko? I mean, most people already know about Tarenfenko, but to start the season off, national audience, and to play the game that he played was terrific. I thought Ohio State, they won the game, 14-8. I think if they would have hit some more of the shots where they had opportunities, they could have scored 20 on Hopkins. I think in the second half in particular, they missed a few shots that they were hitting earlier in the game. Connor Mitchell is a middie, big strong kid out of Georgia, who was really, really good in that Hopkins game. And I think that gives you a glimpse. You know, you think about the team that Ohio State had when they went to the 2017 national championship game, guys like Johnny Pearson in the midfield. You know, Connor Mitchell's almost like a right-handed version of Pearson physically. I think he's a little bit more athletic than Pearson was, but Mitchell gives Ohio State that size and strength in the midfield because their best middie the last few years was Jasinski, Jack Jasinski. Excellent player. Don't get me wrong, but you know, just quick and you know, the jitterbug kind of thing, could invert. You know, they hadn't really had that downhill presence to go along with Trey LeClaire and Jack Myers. And, you know, I think Mitchell fits that bill amongst other guys. And then you want your Jack Jasinski type, Griffin Hughes, the lefty, who's playing some midfield, but he can invert, dodge from the wing. Smaller player, but incredibly skilled, very talented. He had a number of goals against Hopkins. So looking forward to this one. This one in the past has gone a long way towards the fortunes or misfortunes of the of NCAA tournament time. And obviously 2021 is much, 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 much different than anything we've ever looked at. But we'll see if this game, and the series between Ohio State and Rutgers continues to influence beyond when that game is played.
Before we get to our marquee matchup of the week, Virginia and Syracuse, let's bring in our guest this week, Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany. Now in his fifth season in Charlottesville, Coach Tiffany will take his 3-0 and third-ranked Cavaliers to the Carrier Dome for this matchup against the Orange on Saturday evening. Coach Tiffany, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
It's wonderful to be with you, Dan and Mark. I know how much traction you're getting in the lacrosse world, so this is a big deal. Thank you.
That's great. Big deal. And Mark Dixon, really do not go together, or Dan Flynn. So we certainly appreciate the compliments, coach, and we appreciate your time. So 2021, the Cavaliers are off to a terrific start, undefeated, depending upon which poll you look at. Some are one, some are, you know, definitely top three, but you know, the finished product, or the product that we see on the weekends, there's so much work that goes into putting that out onto the field. What has pandemic life been like in Charlottesville for the Virginia lacrosse program?
A non-productive fall. We fell victim to some poor decisions and some positive tests, and so we didn't really have a productive fall. And what that did is it really highlighted the importance of mid-January, the beginning of our preseason, that we had to get a lot in. We were fortunate that school didn't start till February 1, but we were allowed to start 2.5 weeks before that. And so that was like, when does a spring sport have a training camp? That's a fall sport luxury, to come back in early August and have 3 or 4 weeks without classes. And we were fortunate to have that. And that was tremendously beneficial for us, especially considering the fall that we really didn't experience. In some ways, I felt like an Ivy League coach again, where you're really hamstrung in the fall and limited. And to be optimistic and positive, we tried to find the good things that come from that. And Matt Moore and Ian LaViano were talking to me like, coach, we're really excited about playing lacrosse here in January, you know, and we love the game anyways. And so we've had great energy and we got a lot done for those 2.5 weeks. The weather was good and it was just great. Now, we fell into the pitfall, the blocking and tackling of lacrosse. We tended to avoid it because of the cleansing of COVID protocols and smaller groups. And so we got a lot done in January, but then in our first scrimmage against Lynchburg, it was startling watching Steve Kadelka and his team beat us for a half. And I'm not kidding. You guys, come on. No, I'm not kidding. The scoreboard, they had one more goal than us at halftime. And so we then got that reality of, wow, the first time you step on the field and play real lacrosse, you know, the physical game that we learned from the Native Americans, and I was so fortunate to grow up with the Onondagas, we hadn't been doing. And so that was the aha moment. So then we entered February, even though it was now game time, getting ready for Towson and then West Point and so on, we had to become much more physical in practice. So it's not that we threw all the COVID protocols aside, but I said, we got to get closer to each other. We got to hit each other. We got to check each other. We got to do some more one-on-ones, and we got to get up and down on tough ground balls. And so fortunately, we had a first contest that was a scrimmage, whereas you're seeing some teams, their first contest is a game, and that's dangerous because it's a different year.
We talk about being flexible, being able to adjust, being able to pivot, and no greater example than Virginia. UMass and Army are scheduled to play a game a couple weeks back, and there's COVID outbreaks within the Minuteman program. Virginia was able then, and Army for that matter, was able to transition, and you guys scheduled a game on short notice. The game ended up on a turf field, not at Klockner. It was a live stream was put together. So everything came together. That's a lot of hustle. Could you describe what that situation was like and how it came to be and all the moving parts that had to be put into place?
And the summary is elation. There we are, having just played Towson and thinking, 2 weeks for the next game. Dang. And I had been holding out hope to trying to schedule a game with Lehigh and Kevin Cassis, a great coach, good friend. And it just wasn't coming together. And because we needed to find a neutral sites, and finding neutral sites during the COVID pandemic is really difficult. I mean, just getting a game itself, but finding a neutral site that will follow ACC medical advisory group protocols and everything else you need. And it just fell through. So when I got those text messages and that phone call from Coach Alberici at West Point Sunday morning, sitting here with my staff, breaking down the Towson film, it was elation. Like, wow, we got a chance here. Really fortunate to have both administrations, West Point, to be able to pivot from a closer trip to Amherst, Massachusetts, to a much longer trip to Charlottesville, Virginia. Fortunate for our administration to pivot when they're thinking there's not going to be a game, and then all of a sudden you're not only fighting the real opponent and the COVID opponent, but then the weather, which we almost never have to deal with here, but there was 5 inches of snow that fell that Thursday. And so now we're shifting a game we just scheduled, we're shifting it by a day, you know, just all these moving parts. But luckily the administration's made it work. The support staff, like literally 3 hours before the game, there's no television. This is not going to be streamed. And Slammer and Schuler and a couple other guys in our video services department said, hey, I think we can stretch a cable from the field hockey scoreboard and from that building over there. And they stretched it as far as they could, and they hooked it up because we never had played a real game down on our practice field. And so it was kind of pinching yourself like that. Wow, this is really happening. No fans, you know, and you know, but it kind of, and I remember Coach Alberich, I'll steal from him. He's the one who said, like, you know, we sometimes say, hey, I don't care where we play. We'll play in a parking lot. You know, it really epitomized it. Like, wherever, let's just play, you know, whatever, however we can figure this out. And, you know, obviously we were fortunate to win, but I think just fortunate to play and really grateful for all the people who helped put that together. And I think we'll see more examples of that this year. You know, hopefully not involving us. Hopefully our schedule stays the same and the COVID monster stays away. But yeah, I think that ability to adapt is something I think all of us are, you know, eager to do. And just because bottom line, the men and on the women's side, the women deserve to play. They need to play. You know, us coaches love our jobs. We love developing men. And we really like the games. The players love the game, right? That this is what it's all about. We have to do whatever we can to find to give them that opportunity to play.
It's funny to hear you tell the stories behind the scenes, because I was able to watch the live stream of the Army game, and you would never have known any of this. But like, just watching it, it seemed like it was always planned, and it was a good product. Coach, when you look around the ACC, there seems to be an abundance of riches, especially on the offensive end, talent-wise. Coming into the season, you had some known commodities, Matt Moore, Ian Laviano, Dox Aitken. But some of the contributions from guys like Peyton Cormier, Charlie Bertrand, Connor Schellenberg have really led your team so far this season. What's been the emergence of those guys, and how do you blend all that talent together and keep guys happy?
Well, I'll start with the latter of the questions. That is a tricky part. Every coach in the country wants that problem. I understand that. No one's going to say, cry us a river, because I'll tell you a little funny story. We were getting ready for one of our three games, and there was some concern about some potential unavailability of some of our offensive players. And while we wanted them all to be available, there was almost a little bit of a sense of relief from the offensive coordinator, Sean Kerwin. Like, okay, if we're missing those couple guys, all right, now I know who to actually play on attack and who's at midfield, and I don't have to worry about making sure everyone gets enough playing time. It was a little, I say that a bit in jest, but a bit serious too. Like, we're just in a really, really fortunate time right now. And unfortunately, we got some opponents in the ACC who have the similar issues, you know, we're really, really blessed to have the firepower we have. Obviously, Connor Schellenberger redshirted last year, and he's available now. Charlie Bertrand transfers from Merrimack, and what he can do. And Peyton Cormier obviously started his career last year with those 6 games, but, you know, his scoring ability. And then you combine it with the knowns of Matt Moore and Dox Aitken and Ian Laviano. And then some other men are stepping up, Xander Dixon and Griffin Harris and Pete Carno. So it's, wow. You know, remind me of this, okay? Years from now, you know, whether I'm at Virginia or somewhere else, remind me. Remember, you had those problems with too much talent, and so what it does allow us to do is it really makes some tough matchups. It's who do you pull, and then we're fortunate enough right now that we really think three or four men who can take on a good pull, a good defenseman. Doesn't mean we're going to win that matchup every time, but if one of them's not winning this matchup, and maybe someone else can. So it's, you know, certainly really, really fortunate to have these men. And so far, we've been able to keep, you know, like you were talking about, you know, the balance of power, who's got much, are you getting the ball enough? Are you getting your shots? Are you comfortable at midfield? You know, I know you're really an attackman. We got a lot of guys who are really attackmen playing some at the midfield, rotating them in through the midfield. For example, Charlie Bertrand, I don't think he's ever been a middie, and he's got a lot to learn there. You know, so far, I think Coach Kerwin has done a really nice job, you know, finding that sweet spot. But it's a moving target, you know, so it's but yeah, it's good problems to have.
The goalie position is something that, through the COVID situation, because of protocols, sometimes you might not be able to dress four goalies or three goalies. And you've had a situation in goaltending with Alex Rode, the most outstanding player from your 2019 championship run, has not been available the last couple of weeks. Bobby Gavin has stepped in and done a really, really nice job for you guys. What does that situation pose to a coach and your staff when your main goaltender isn't available and you have to throw a kid in who is not only inexperienced, I mean, he is a freshman playing against Army, playing against Loyola.
You know, what is it? Ignorance is bliss. You know, that there was a photo of him during the Army game and the ball's at his end of the field and he's like in his goalie stance. He's got a smile on his face. Like, I think he's really enjoying playing. And I don't know if he understood how like important this felt to the rest of us, you know, like he's playing a game and there's a beauty in that, right? You know, the joy of that, like, you know, that's what I learned from the Onondaga people. Like it's kind of like spiritual to play. It's a part of a religion, but it's also enjoyable and playing. And that's what I saw with Bobby. Both games, you know, the first three or four shots went in. And yet he just, you know, you want that goalie to have that next shot mentality, but he epitomized it more than anyone's because he'd come off with a smile on his face. Like he's just happy to be playing and can't wait to go back out there for the next quarter. And, so he's really, really did more than we anticipated. But to go back in time a little bit, yeah, the day we learned that Alex Rode's not going to be available, it's like, oh boy, you know, oh boy, here we go. And, you know, and we already had one goalie injured. He's out for the year. And so that put us down to two goalies and, Bobby, a first year and then David Rozelle, a walk on. And so, yeah, it was a challenge. It certainly was a challenge for us, but boy, Bobby stepped up. He's really comfortable in the clearing game. He throws a great ball. He understands how to move the ball. And I've had first and second year goalies not have any idea what clearing looks like. And so he gave us some confidence there as well. And yeah, so we know we've got somebody who is not afraid, not scared, and ready for the next one, no matter what happened last shot when he plays. Now Alex Rode is our goalie. And when Alex Rode becomes available, this is Alex Rode's team. And so we're looking forward to having Alex Rode back into goal soon, hopefully really soon.
Keeping on the goalie motif, you're on the rules committee and the dive was reinstituted a couple years ago. And this year we're seeing the goal mouth come into play huge. It came into play in your Loyola game where a Greyhound goal was taken off the board because of a player being put into the goal mouth. And as a referee myself, we are educated, a player lands in the goal mouth, no matter how he gets in there, it is no goal. And a primary reason is the protection of the netminders. It is first and foremost player safety to begin with. But again, with COVID now, coaches are even more inclined to protect their netminders because of the potential for injury and those kinds of things. Just wondering if you could walk us through your thoughts on how the goal mouth has affected, could affect the 2021 play. And then, you know, just the dive in and of itself, is it what you and the committee envisioned, how it's gone about in that 2019 season, obviously short sample size in 2020 and a little sample size so far in 21.
Sure. Well, the dive came about because mandate's the wrong word, but there was a push for it. We surveyed the nation's coaches, officials, administrators, and essentially felt like we had this mandate to put the dive in or find a way to create a rule that allowed the dive to occur. You look at a couple of those goals and I believe it was a 2018 where the Denver and Maryland game and a great, great playoff game. And maybe it's seven, I forget right now, but you know, there's, you know, Heacock makes this incredible dive, but his foot barely touches the line, no goal. Then Denver comes back and we think they tied it with 10 seconds left, no goal. And people are like, how can we get that type of acrobatic, athletic, exciting play back in the game? And so that's where the push came from. Let's fast forward to the current stage of the dive rule where we have this goal mouth. The rule about no matter what, if the offensive player ends up in that goal mouth, there's no goal, is really to deter the angle, the path of the offensive player from getting near there. Even if he gets pushed and there's going to be a penalty on the defense, he can't end up there. So it's really sort of putting the onus back on the offensive player. If you're going to be coming along the GLE or sort of dive bombing underneath, you've got to try to be ending up outside of the crease, outside of that goal mouth, even if you get pushed, because if you end up in that goal mouth. So, for example, there was a really well-viewed play by Army against Syracuse right at the end of the third quarter, where the Army midfielder, you know, kind of comes from the midfield and goes right along that GLE and gets pushed. You know, it looks like he gets pushed by the Syracuse defender, ends up in the goal mouth, rolls into the goalie. And a lot of people are like, ah, that's a bad call. I'm like, he's got to try to take a little more upfield angle because we really want to protect the goalie. So you could say, well, wait a minute. If you really want to protect the goalie, go back to the old rules and say you can't get anywhere in the crease. Very true. I appreciate that and I accept that counterpoint. But because of the mandate to try to bring back some sort of version of a dive, we had to find an in-between ground where we want the dive, but there's a no-fly. You cannot be in the goal mouth no matter what. We've seen the call so far. Yes, it occurred in our Loyola game in the first quarter where Kevin Lindley, a fantastic goal scorer, one of the fantastic offensive player, scored on a man up while we were hitting him from behind. And unfortunately for Loyola, just a bit of his glove, you know, just a bit of him, you know, lands in the goal mouth. And the referees talked for about a minute and they got it right. Like, this doesn't matter how he gets there. We went two men down now. There's a part of it too, as a rules committee, we want to make sure we're trying not to make the game more complicated to officiate. It's a complicated game enough. We already have three officials doing the best they can. And so having the goal mouth cut and dry, if you're in, you're in, no goal. That was another incentive there to make it simpler.
Coach, you have a marquee game coming up this Saturday night in Syracuse against the Orange at 6:00. And we're definitely going to get your thoughts on that game as you prepare for it. But I have a question about road trips, probably looking a lot different than they used to. What is the difference in your team travel and your protocols as you make a trip like this to play a big game?
Yeah, it doesn't quite rhyme, but it's like, get on the bus, let's go play lacrosse. We are not flying anywhere this year. We're busing to Syracuse, which isn't too bad. That's only 8 hours. We're busing to South Bend, Indiana next month. You know, that's about 12 hours and we're just busing and we got to get used to it. Now, what else is different? We took three buses to Loyola and we're taking three buses to Syracuse because of the protocol. You know, everyone's got, you got your whole row essentially, you know, from that window to that window, you got those four seats and that's wild, isn't it? It feels like a football team, you know, pulling out, you know, meals. You know, right now we're in a phase where we can't eat on the bus. We can't eat a meal. You can take a little snack and put your mask on while you chew, but so you got to leave a little earlier because you got to, for example, going to Syracuse, we got to stop in Carlisle, Pennsylvania and get out and eat our box lunch. So it makes it a little different, but you know, it's sort of, this is what it is, fellas. And it's different and we're going to do it and we're going to make it happen. We're not going to talk about it much. Here's the logistics figured out. And by the way, having three buses, it is kind of nice. You can stretch out, you know, it's not that bad. That 8 hour trip, you know, I'm the king of being frugal when it comes to travel. And we played Maryland in 2019 up at Hofstra. We put the whole team plus all the managers, we had 53 people on a 54 person bus. You know, you know, you got Jared Connors and Kyle Kaloji and Cade Southstad. They're all like 6'5", like squished in their seats for 8 hours. And I'm like, nah, we're fine. We're good. So it's a lot different.
As long as you have good movies. That reminds me, every road trip we took at Hopkins, Coach Pete Jacobs, 6'5", would always ask to grab my aisle seat, you know, on my 5 foot seven, so he could stretch his legs out. So I can only imagine if we had, you know, full capacity on that bus. Once you arrive in Syracuse, this is a terrific game. It's on tap. You guys come in with some momentum, undefeated. Meanwhile, Syracuse struggled in their home opener, and that same Army team that you had beaten a week prior to Syracuse meeting the Black Knights, they took it to them. So how do you size this matchup, in your opinion, when you've watched the film, when you go over everything? What can fans expect?
It sort of, why would there be nothing any different from any other time Syracuse plays Virginia, right? 22-21. I don't know if we're going to get that high, but, you know, that's sort of the dream, right? You know, 15-14 games seem to be the norm. And so I know that's what the anticipation that our staff has. It's going to be a fun, fast-paced, high-energy, high-scoring game. The advantage of having just played West Point, I mean, we always watch West Point Syracuse because we typically play Syracuse soon after they play West Point. But now having played West Point, we can recognize how athletic and tough West Point's defense is. And so we can watch West Point's defense keep Syracuse to 11 goals. But it also reminds us, like, oh yeah, some of the things they can do on defense at West Point, that's most of the rest of us can't. You know, they're just so athletic. And number 11, Marcus Hudgens, what a heck of a cover defender. They've got short, stick, midi, 6'2", 215 pounds, who can really deny an individual Dodger. And so I think there's some advantage of having known how athletic and good Army's defense is, so that we don't fall into the trap. Because sometimes, like, oh, I guess you can short stick that guy. And then you're like, oh, we can. Maybe Army can. But I don't know if we can. And so and like I said, alluded to earlier, we understood after playing Steve Kadelka's Lynchburg team in our first scrimmage, how different it looks the first time you really put on the pads against somebody else and you're fighting for tough ground balls and playing one-on-ones and smashing into each other. And so, our anticipation is that was Syracuse got their wake-up call like we did against Lynchburg. And they'll be much more prepared and much more ready. So it's really exciting. Fans or no fans, of course, it's great when there's 5,000 people out there, but just being in the Carrier Dome and, having the two blue and orange teams take it on, going after each other. I pinch myself that I get to be a part of this rivalry. Like, you know, I grew up in the shadows of the Carrier Dome in Lafayette, New York, and we grew up bleeding orange. And I'm like, wow, I get to be a part of this rivalry. I get to be a part of this game. So it's super exciting for the men and certainly myself.
Well, we're all certainly looking forward to watching that game on Saturday night, and we wish you the best of luck. Coach Tiffany, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan. Thanks, Mark. And you guys do a great job in getting people excited about the upcoming games and the whole season. So thank you for what you do.
Always great to have guests, but not just that, but guests that are willing to share, you know, and not just do the coach speak. So I thought Lars was terrific. We've been really fortunate to have awesome guests so far in 2021, Roger Blumenthal, Bill Tierney, Charlie Toomey. And that was really fun to talk to Lars.
Yeah. Always great to have Lars on. And as you said, he's very candid and he's just fun to talk to. He's excited about life and coaching and his team this year. And you can hear it in his voice. And it's always fun to talk to him.
He's a different cat. And oftentimes when you say that about somebody, you're like, oh, in what way? But that's a different cat in like a good way.
Yeah. And I think everyone who knows him knows exactly what you mean and thinks positively of that statement. So let's talk about this game. This is a big one. Syracuse kind of got embarrassed in the Carrier Dome last week, which never happens or rarely happens. And Virginia is playing as well as any team in the country. And they have the benefit of, you know, they've both played Army West Point, so they have some common tape to look at. Of course, it was Syracuse's first game, and Coach Tiffany mentioned about how hard that is for all teams and how they were lucky to be able to have a scrimmage before their first game. But what do you see unfolding in the Carrier Dome this Saturday night?
I think you can't ignore the results that Virginia had against Army and then the Syracuse had against Army. And the MO for the Orange Nation through the years, if something like this were to happen, it would be, well, you know, we can't get outside. We can't get in a full field. We've got snow. We've got weather. We can't get in the dome because of basketball. Now they have their indoor facility, which I guess makes it all a moot point. But still, COVID has wreaked havoc on teams' preparation and their ability to execute in practice. I do think what Coach Tiffany said about having a scrimmage is golden. To have some outside competition before you get into a real game is immeasurable in terms of its value. That being said, when these two teams get together, it's always fun. It's always great. This game will be on the ACC Network 6 o'clock Saturday night. It'll be a lot of fun. You know, when these guys get together, it will be fun. And I'll miss the crowd in the dome. I missed the crowd already. You know, I missed them last week against Army, but the crowd has always added an extra dimension to this rivalry. But it's still going to be a really, really good one and a lot of fun. Virginia, I mean, man, to go from Towson, Army, Loyola. You didn't mention the Army or the Virginia Loyola game from a week ago. What a great game that was. You know, Loyola jumped out early, Virginia battled back, and Loyola had an answer twice late, erasing 2-3 goal deficits before Virginia finally put a few plays together and went out of Evergreen with a victory. But Virginia's already battled. They might be the most battle-tested top-ranked team in the nation at this point in terms of the quality of opponents that they've played. You know, you could very well see both Army and Loyola in the NCAA tournament, you know, potentially in the quarterfinals in 2021. Again, if there is an NCAA tournament. So Virginia, not only do they have that scrimmage under their belt, but they've got three games versus only one for Syracuse. But motivation is a wonderful thing when you get smacked around like that. And also the improvement from game one to game two. We saw it a lot last week. Loyola looked so much better against Virginia than they did against Richmond. Army looked so much better against Syracuse than they did against Virginia. You know, that progression of development is a real thing. And we'll see if Syracuse can experience that.
All right, Dix, it's time for the ever popular give and go. I discussed this with you. So what should we talk about this week? You said, how about foods of the pandemic?
Yeah. Some things that you might have, you cook as anyway, but I've cooked every now and again with when I get a hankering for something and, you know, done some things that I would normally wouldn't do in regular times. In pandemic times, I've gone out of my comfort zone and stepped it up.
Well, explain. Go into detail, please, sir.
So I got to give a shout out to a couple of places on Instagram that have inspired me in the kitchen. The first is Schneider's Shack. Shout out Eric Schneider, former Johns Hopkins goaltender. Schneider's Shack.
I remember him.
Yeah. Okay. Are you familiar with Schneider's Shack?
No.
Check it out. He cooks everything. You know, he does pastas. He does fish, meats. He's got Black Betty, I think, is his smoker. Him and his, I think it's Eric's girlfriend. Pardon me to both of you if that's not the case, but I do believe it's Eric's girlfriend. They built a brick oven pizza, or a brick oven, I should say, to make pizza. So he does a little bit of everything. And he inspired me actually to do homemade sushi, to where, you know, you pick up the fish, then you get the rice and you get the roller and the seaweed skin. I know there's a word for it or a name for it, but I made homemade sushi that way. So Schneider's Shack. And then another former Hopkins goalie, Brian Carcaterra, has an Instagram called Drunken Meatball. And I don't know if you've ever seen Drunken Meatball, but Carc is big on proteins. And he's a hunter. So, you know, he eats what he harvests, and a lot of burgers, tacos, wings. But the things that he inspired me to try out were homemade meatballs, making meatballs with a combination of bison, lamb, and maybe beef. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look. But and then you put a little bit of ricotta in the meatballs to hold it all together. So I cook my own meatballs, courtesy of Drunken Meatball. And then whenever we do chicken parm in the Dixon house, it's typically like chicken fillets, and then you melt some cheese on top, and then you pour your sauce. Well, like watching Drunken Meatball, watching Carcaterra, like he would use parchment paper or some other type of paper, and then you like actually bang the chicken, or I don't even know what the right word is for it. Like you tenderize it or whatever, but you flatten it. Yeah. And then you fry it, and then, oh man, it was so good. So like homemade meatballs, homemade chicken parmesan because of the Drunken Meatball. And then the last Instagram account that I would, is Low Carb Love. And I don't know this woman at all. She's got tons and tons and tons of followers. But a lot of recipes for, low carb things. So anyway, and she has gotten me on the kick of unwiches. So that's when you take lettuce, like big leaves of romaine,
right?
And then you throw your protein in, whether it's a chicken salad or turkey or whatever, throw in your vegetable, you know, your tomato, your onion, pickles, jalapeno, whatever, and use parchment paper. And then you basically roll it all up, cut it in half. And then instead of it being, you know, bread, it's lettuce. And that's the base of your, you know, that's your unwich. It's called an unwich. So
a healthy alternative.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I love bread, man, but I've got to stop eating so many. I mean, I love bread, like carbs. Oh boy. Oh boy. But you know, and then the other staples, man, nothing, you know, peanut butter. I've started melting peanut butter a lot. Like in the morning I'll have Greek, non-fat yogurt, like a cup and a half of that. And then like slice half a banana on there, maybe like a quarter cup of granola. And then you take just like a tablespoon of peanut butter, melt it in the microwave, and then drizzle that on top. It's like, it's good stuff, man.
I'm pleasantly surprised by all this, Dix. And I can't believe that Instagram has been your inspiration for all of this.
I drive my wife crazy because
it's not like you. And you're growing up right before my very eyes. I love it. Listen. You're maturing. You're becoming a more evolved human being. This is great.
I'm still a disgusting fat body, but I am trying new things. I drive my wife crazy because I'm like, oh, we got to try this recipe. Okay, where is it? My wife's big on like Pinterest and, okay, where is it spelled out? I'm like, no, you just got to watch the video. Watch the video. Watch the story. And like, this moves too fast. And I'm like, yeah, well. So.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, obviously, we're not alone in that when you're stranded in your house during a pandemic, that dinner or food has become like a huge or an outlet or a fun way to do something. You can get your kids involved. You can get your wife involved or your spouse. And it's certainly been fun in the Flynn house. You know, I do a lot of cooking and I don't really like to use recipes. I don't know why. I can't really follow one. I'll look up a recipe and see how they make it or what some of the ingredients are, but then I kind of like wing it from there and it almost always turns out really well. So that's the way I kind of like to cook. We got an Instapot. You have an Instant Pot? We didn't have one and we got one at the beginning of the pandemic. It's like a pressure cooker.
Is that similar to a crock pot?
It's different than a crock pot that's, you know, or my crock pot's ceramic and you pretty much slow cook stuff in it all day long. Mm-hmm. An Instant Pot is a pressurized cooking thing that it allows you to cook things in a fraction of the time.
Oh, okay. Is it like the Ron Popeil, the set it and forget it type thing?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. But you can do other things with it. I didn't read the directions for it and I probably should.
Oh, that's good.
But you can saute things in it. So for instance, I made beef stew last night. And you can brown the beef and sear the beef right in the pot in olive oil. And then you just kind of scrape it and you deglaze it with some wine or beef broth.
Okay.
And then you put your onions and everything in there. Then you cut up you put the meat back in, you put the potatoes in, the carrots, and you just put it 35 minutes. You come back, you got beef stew. And it's fantastic. So a lot of Instant Pot cooking is kind of playing around with that. But there's other ways, things to cook. Like for some reason, hard-boiled eggs. I eat hard-boiled eggs for like breakfast every day.
I need to start eating more hard-boiled eggs.
It's just good, quick protein. It's cheap. It's easy to do. And you just kind of make.
How do you prepare yours?
Well, I'm telling you, you put it in an Instant Pot.
I don't have an Instant Pot.
I'm saying you just boil them then. But 5 minutes, I can't explain it. The shells come off so easily when you cook it in the Instant Pot. When you do it in a pan and you just boil it in a pot of water, it's just hard to get the shells off and you got to really work at it. But in this pot, just kind of like come right off. I can't explain it. It just works better. Same with potatoes. I'm never boiling potatoes on an open pot. Put them in the Instant Pot. I've been making a lot of mashed potatoes because it's so easy to do in the Instant Pot. Because you can also
Had mashed potatoes the other night. I haven't had those in a long time.
They're so good. Mm. And same with rice. We had a rice cooker to make, you know, sushi rice, sticky white rice. But you just do it in the Instant Pot. It's quick it turns out perfect. So a lot of that.
Sound like an infomercial for Instant Pot. I'm never going to peel potatoes again because why is that billboard flashing over your right shoulder saying Instant Pot?
Early on in the pandemic, maybe it was like in early April, I started making menus each week because one, we didn't want to go to the grocery store a lot. You know, people just freaked out and everyone was weird and there was a lot of stuff that wasn't in stock or available. So we'd make one big trip like every couple of weeks or try to. So I wanted to plan out our meals, but also it gave us something to look forward to. Mm-hmm. I realized without sports, when we have sports on our calendar, we think about and can look forward to, oh man, there's this great Cuse Virginia game that's this Saturday night. There's a Maryland Penn State game that's tonight that I'm going to watch. You plan your whole week looking forward to stuff like that. But when all of that's off the schedule, not just lacrosse, but every sport, there were no golf tournaments, there was no basketball, there was no nothing. There was like every day just ran into each other. So this was just another way for my family and I to sort of have something to look forward to. Like Thursday is going to be this, or every Friday we would get takeout from a restaurant just to like support local businesses. So we kind of started doing that. And that really helped a lot. And we planned out like elaborate dinners. And one thing that we were making all the time, barbecued ribs. I basically perfected like a rub and a way to cook them in like mostly in the oven, slow cook them and then put them on my grill. I can't tell you how many racks of ribs I cooked in the spring and the summer, especially.
I wish I'd known that. That's one thing that, you know, it's very difficult to cook to get them the falling off the bone quality kind of.
Yeah, so you just got to cook them slow and low in the oven.
Slow and low. That is the tempo.
All right. And then I remember asking my kids, maybe, you know, and this is my son was 4, my daughter was 6 at the time. It's probably in the early fall when I said, what are you most looking forward to when the pandemic is over? When coronavirus, that's what they call it, when coronavirus is gone. And my 4-year-old son, I don't know where he got this from, but he just blurts out, sports and chicken wings. not like hanging out with your friends or like, you know, being able to go to school or seeing your grandparents or whatever. He said sports and chicken wings. So I have been eating a lot of wings now that the sports are back on.
Wings are fantastic.
I'll get these. Purdue makes these frozen, like a 5-pound bag of wings you can get at Costco. And I'll just cook up like a dozen of those. It's really easy to do. And you just bust those out. And I'll just sit down with like a beer and some wings and a little bit of celery. And I do that at least once a week. I'm making myself some wings.
So that's one, like, it sounds like you have a pretty good grasp of it. But if you wanted to see some good wing stuff, again, Drunken Meatball does his own wings.
I just saw some on his site.
Okay.
And they look really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole. So do you, when you get the wings, do you like fry them and the whole 9 yards?
No. So they come.
You mentioned the Instant Pot. The investment that I've been meaning to make is the air fryer. I want to get an air fryer.
Yeah, I've heard those things are fun. Okay. I don't have one. I need to get a new toaster oven, and they come with like a toaster oven air fryer.
Yeah,
and someone recommended to me to not bother with that.
Okay.
So just get a good toaster oven that's also a convection oven. So that's what I did. Okay. I got it like a week ago. Black & Decker giant thing and cook a whole pizza in there. I don't know. It's like I have two ovens now. I probably should have gotten one that was a little bit smaller. But that's what I've been doing. My drink of the pandemic has been vodka and grapefruit juice. Man, when the weather started to get a little warm last spring and through the summer, just put it right on the rocks. Man, quick and easy and refreshing.
Yeah, I do the I would do a Deep Eddy and soda, grapefruit. Orange crushes came hot and heavy into the Dixon household.
Yeah.
My wife is a huge wine drinker, so, you know, wine is always good. But lately I've just, you know, trying to stay trim, quote unquote, just a straight up Tito's and soda is my drink of choice.
Yeah. Kind of stay away from the brown stuff. Don't put any sweet stuff with it.
Yeah, I know. And I tell you, I was on the hook a little bit. I got a case of that Yuengling chocolate porter from Hershey, that Hershey's has a hand in. I that was really, really difficult to find back in the fall. And I was able to go out to Total Wine and Laurel. Shout out Total Wine and Laurel. And I'm like, I had been to about six or seven other places. And one of the local mom and pops around here where I live, great people. You know, I was like, hey, I went in on Monday. Ah, we're getting it in on Thursday. Went in on Thursday. Ah, oh, man, got delayed. Try back next Monday. So instead of stopping up, I just called. And they're like, oh, man, we didn't get it. Not only did we not get it, it's sold out across the country. Sold out. I'm like, no way. So I went on Total Wine's website, saw it. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to drive out there anyway, get out of the house, see what's up. I'm like frantically, I'm like in the beer section. I don't see it. I'm like, do you guys have the Yuengling chocolate porter? They're like, yeah, it's right over there. A huge display. I mean, they must have like 30 cases of the stuff.
How much did you buy?
I bought a case.
Just one?
Oh, come on, man. I'm not like those hounds in, you know, those nudnigs in Costco or, you know, Target buying up 25 things of Clorox wipes and whatnot. I mean,
come on, Dick. I had a case,
and I still haven't drank the whole thing. So there you go.
Should have bought six cases. And then when they run out, you sit in the other end of the parking lot and you sell them for six packs at a time. For
now, you know what? I should have bought six cases and taken it to that mom and pop liquor store that I was talking about. And
right.
Sold it to them.
Yeah. A little markup, middleman.
How much you want? $60 a case.
Well, the sad thing is you're the only person that would pay that to get it there. So they'd have to sell it back to you at the higher price. So it wouldn't work out for them anyway.
Right.
All right. We would like to thank our guest this week, Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany. Thanks for your time and best of luck to you and the Cavaliers this season. If you like what you've heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review if you would. Tell a friend and share the love. Now more than ever, it's important that we have unity. Whether you're a Cavaliers fan or an Orange fan, just tell a friend, share the gift. Also, we always love to hear from you. So give us a shout on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY, at DFly. And remember, stay positive and test negative. And as always, enjoy the games while you can. Dix, two other news items of the week I want your take on, not lacrosse related specifically, but the DWI and reckless driving charges were dropped on one Bruce Springsteen earlier this week.
It pays to be a celebrity. Different rules for guys like D-Fly and Dixie. They don't apply to elitists like Bruce Springsteen.
Well, for the record, he wasn't drunk or driving recklessly.
No, apparently, he just drank a shot. He drank a shot or two of tequila and then jumped on a motorcycle.
Well, an overzealous security guard, park ranger. He took a breathalyzer test down at 0.002. And I think the legal limit is 0.08, excuse me, 0.02. So he wasn't, the guy saw him do a shot and that's why he got it. So all that grief you've given me about one of my heroes, Bruce Springsteen.
Doesn't make it right.
Not even a crime.
Doesn't make it right.
Not even a crime.
Doesn't make it right.
And in other news, I have watched now 6 episodes of your show, Kingdom.
Ah, and?
Yeah. I like it. I mean, I'm continuing to watch it. I was apprehensive because I'm not a big MMA fighting guy, but that might be my favorite part because the characters are so unlikable that I actually like when they're fighting. Obviously, like Nick Jonas, he's a character that you can get behind. He doesn't say a whole lot. I'm 6 episodes in.
Yeah.
But man, the one thing I noticed is no person has a good relationship with their kids and no kid has a good relationship with their parents.
Right.
All of them, whether it's Ryan Wheeler,
Jay Kalina.
The Kalinas, the Lisa with her dad who came to town and went out. They're all just a terrible, I don't know, the writers of that show must hate their parents for some reason.
I mean, it's kind of like when you turn on the news, when I hear Nora O'Donnell's voice come on my television, if my wife is watching the news, I run out of the room because, it's all gloom and doom and that, with that music behind them, and that's what sells, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm waiting for something to be like, great news tonight. Man walks dog across the street, gets him out of harm's way of traffic, something like that. But how can you, I get it. I don't understand how you can not like Jay Kalina. I mean, Jay Kalina is, that guy has so many layers to him.
Well, I'm at the part where he's really taking care of his mom. And you're like, okay, so there's a whole nother side of this guy.
I'm not going to shoot you, but you're going to wish I did.
Yeah, that was good. interesting that Wheeler's roommate in the halfway house, Keith, is the guy from Cobra Kai. It's Raven from the Cobra Kai. So that guy keeps popping up. And Stingray.
He's that actor. I can't remember his name, but he's in the movie Richard Jewell.
Yeah,
he plays the guy who bombed.
Name is Hauser.
He cracks me up.
Good observation. I just was like, hey, there's that guy.
Stingray. to your point, my wife and I are we're about 2 episodes away from completing season 3 of Last Kingdom. That show is something.
So if you're confused, just into your Apple TV remote, just ask for Kingdom and watch either show that pops up. Last Kingdom or Kingdom, and you will, and guys, you'll appreciate this. The both of those shows.
I have been taken aback by the lack of courage by some of the Vikings some of the Danes in that show. Like, it's like, when the going gets tough, man, they hightail it out of there. It's,
well, the worst thing you can do is lose men. Losing men is the worst thing.
What does Uhtred say? Men only seek silver and land, and that is all. Or that will never change. Silver and land. I will say this. Uhtred, the way he speaks, he has much greater effect in his voice season 3 than he did in the first 2 seasons. Like, he's like a lot more important, or,
he's matured. I mean, there was a time, it was only a couple of years in the filming of those shows, but the time gap is a decade.
It's significant. Well, yeah, because Edward was, a young baby and a
baby until now
he's a grown man.
Yeah.
In season 3. Yeah.
Yeah. So that show is great. And the end of season 3 is fantastic. You have a couple of good episodes coming up. All right. That's a little deep into this thing.
All right. I want to go get on my Peloton.
Yeah. Go get a good ride in.
Speaking of being fat.
Yeah. So I'm watching Kingdom and I'm eating like a bowl of ice cream. And I'm just watching like Ryan Wheeler try to get back in the shape. And I'm like, I have a new favorite Blue Jay, Connor Delaney, basketball player.
You like him?
He was first team All-American in basketball. That's pretty cool. Yeah, and their season got canceled, so he's like, I'm going to play lacrosse. And he's the starting LSM.